My good friend Ron, who's here to share, just to give you context, Ron is the pastor of Restore Community Church, which is a suburb of a suburb of D.C. in Northern Virginia. I describe that area as, if you know Orange County, California, and the craziness there, it's that on steroids. So bless him for being willing to live in that environment and thrive and serve. Ron is the founder of the nonprofit Generosity Feeds, who we worked with yesterday, and just a wonderful, dear friend. A part of the story of Restore, and I met Ron in Florida a few years ago, thinking nothing about going to the East Coast, and God was just at work and drew us together, and our family went east, and that's a whole nother story. But part of the story of Restore was in planting that church. What was really a desire was to plant a church that in its DNA from day one was living the gospel through generosity, through serving people, through both telling but also living in tangible ways Jesus' love. And so I'm excited that he's here with us this morning. He's a dear friend and a great communicator. So, Ron, if you just come up and if you'd give him your attention.
Thanks, man. Well, you may not know this, but Aaron and I had the privilege, as he just mentioned, to work together for 18 months. And my wife and I were starting a new church in Northern Virginia, and I just kind of really felt overwhelmed, to be honest with you. You know, here I was moving to Washington, D.C., which, if you look at it, really is the most powerful place in the world. Think about that. And that can be a very intimidating environment to walk into. And there's a whole lot of unhealthy things that go on in that environment. And I was just praying, Jesus, would you bring someone that I can do your mission with, that I can live this thing with? You know, and Aaron just said, we had the chance to meet at a conference in Florida. God just united our hearts in a shared mission for reaching the people of the D.C. area, of recognizing that as we reach people in D.C., that has an effect across the world, because that's the most powerful place in the world right now. And so anyhow, it was just very cool what God did in that. And Aaron and I used to laugh because before he came on staff, we decided how he was going to leave. We know that when he showed up, that there was an exit plan, that this wasn't going to be his long-term place. And we used to laugh about that. You know, he'd get on my nerves, and I'd go, you're fired. Get out of here. But we already had the plan, you know. And so God just did some really cool things in our season together as he united our families together in his mission, as he united our hearts, as Aaron went through a healing process because of ministry. Because ministry, as you probably know, can hurt sometimes. And Aaron went through healing, and God just did some amazing things in his life. And about 9 months into his stay with us in Restore, he came to me and he goes, Ron, I don't know what's going on here. I don't know if I just ate something bad or this morning or not, but I just kind of have this sense and feeling that I want to go back to my home church and become the pastor. I said, that's great. We need to pray about that. We need to be, you know, let's really seek God in that. What does that mean? And he didn't even know that you guys were looking for a pastor at that time. And long story short, here he is. And what you need to know is that for me, being here with you today is the fulfillment of a 2-year dream. You see, Aaron and I still talk almost every week. And I get to hear the stories of your life. And I get to hear what God is doing among you. And I'm hearing how he's taking a church that was about 25 people when Aaron showed up, and he's bringing new vision and new life and a sense of mission and purpose. And not that it wasn't there before, but God's changing that. He's renewing something. There's something new happening here. And you need to know that the church that I get to pastor in Northern Virginia, we celebrate what God is doing among you. In fact, back in October, Aaron, along with a number of other pastors around the church, shared what God is doing here with our church because we recognize it's an extension of what God is doing in us back in Northern Virginia. We see that. And when Aaron's video came up on the screen, you need to know that the people of Restore applauded you. So be encouraged with that. You know, powerful moment. I was going to pass Aaron a Kleenex when I came up, but it looks like I needed it. So anyhow, it's just really good to be with you this morning. And it's been an amazing story to see what God is doing. Some of the things that I have been so encouraged about in your life over the last 2 years as I'm hearing the story on play is the work that you've been doing with Project Hope, how you are, you're packaging, 10,000, or I'm sorry, is it, you're doing the Workday 10,000 backpacks and shoes and what is that? Yeah, with 50, I mean, it's like, you kidding me? That's nuts. Like Jesus said, you're going to do greater things than me. Do you think maybe that's what he meant? He never passed out 10,000 pairs of shoes. Think about that. Or I hear the stories of what you're doing with Feed Hope in the neighborhood right here. And I hear, I hear the stories of how even this last week you wrote letters to all of the staff over at Bethel Holt. Huh? What church does that to love on the staff and to share Jesus' love in tangible ways? Because that's what God tells us to do. And the story is still continuing. You're only at the beginning of what God has for you. There's a long way to go. And what I've found in my own journey is that it is so easy in the journey to get caught into doing some great things in the kingdom. And some great stories are told, and after events like yesterday, we can walk away and go, wow, wasn't that awesome? And it was. And so we get caught in the forest, making our way through the forest, and we begin to ask the reason, well, why do we do this stuff? Well, Jesus told us to. Well, that's good. We're doing what Jesus told us to do, but why? How does what you're doing right here play into the larger story that God is writing? Because there's a far bigger story than North Park. There's a far bigger story than your life, than my life. And God's scripting that through you in his story. And this is a beautiful story. So what we're going to do this morning is that instead of zeroing in on one tree or looking at one little part of this journey, what we're going to do this morning is I want to take you above the canopy. And I just want to give you a look at the story that God is writing, the story that you're a part of. And this is an amazing story. And kids, I'm glad that you're in here to hear this story and participate with the adults in this story. And children, as you're listening to the story and you're going through the activity that you have, here's what I hope, kids, is that this afternoon when you're having lunch or dinner with your family, that you will share with them what you learn in the story and ask your parents to share with you what they've discovered in the story that I'm going to begin to tell. Well, the story begins in Genesis chapter 1. In the beginning, every great story starts in that way. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And God said, let us make man in our image. And God created them, male and female, and named them man. And God said, let them rule and let them have dominion. Let them cultivate and subdue the earth. And let them be fruitful and multiply. Now, I've taken a lot of verses there and packed them into one little statement. But let's look at the first part of that. God said, let us make man in our image. Well, what does that mean? Well, where I'm from in Washington, D.C., if you've ever been there, there are statues all over the place. I mean, if there's an old dead dude, he's got a statue. It's just kind of the way it is. And so these statues are made in the image of the man or woman they represent. They're made in the image of that person to represent them. And God says, I've created you in my image. You have the very nature, the very wiring of God himself. Well, that doesn't make you God. Your wife or husband will tell you that, so your kids. But you are the image of God. Whew. Think about that. You know what that means? That means that people that don't necessarily have a relationship with God yet, they're made in the image of God. The character of God is woven into them. Think about that. There may not be so much difference between people in the church and people who aren't in the church. We're all children of the King, made in his image. And so he goes on in Genesis, and he created us male and female. Interesting. Relationship shows up right at the beginning of the story. In fact, God says this. He says, everything that I have created is what? Good. But then he looks at Adam and he says, time out. It is not good that you be alone. So everything that God has created is good, and yet there is one thing that is not good. Adam's alone. Why? Because God has created you and me for relationship. It's a purpose that he has woven into life, that we are not created to live life in isolation. We're created to live life in community, in relationship with one another. And when we do that, we thrive, because that's his image. That's his image. And then the story goes on, as I just read. It says, and let them rule. Let them have dominion over the earth. In other words, let my creation, let my children have authority in this world. Whoa, whoa, time out. You ever thought about that before? You have authority given to you by God to rule, to lead, to oversee, to manage this earth. So God in this moment is wrapping in his purpose for you to work. What does he say to Adam early on in the story? The animals are created, and he says, I got a job for you, buddy. Name them. Name them. Give them a name. That's your place. So Adam begins naming the animals. And then it continues. And let them cultivate and subdue the earth, and let them be fruitful and multiply. See the family in that? That God is saying, listen, I've created this loving environment where men and women, man and woman come together and they create family and they multiply. And at this point in the story, I'm going, yay, God, sign me up for that. That's the fun part. And so we get to have family. You know what I'm learning in my journey? God gave me kids to parent me. God gave me kids to learn what it means to be a child again. Because Jesus said, unless you become like a child, you cannot inherit the kingdom of heaven. And so my children are teaching me how to be a kid again. Because something got messed up in my journey. Just like I think something gets messed up in just about all of our journeys. Because here God created this paradise that you and I still long for. We long for comfort. We long for peace. We long for our relational world to work right. We hate the pain. We do what seems to be easy a lot of the time. Why? Because we're longing for this paradise that we were created in. You were created. We were created in a perfect garden. But God didn't design us to stay in a garden. He designed us for more, and we're going to understand that and see that as this story continues. And then in the middle of the garden, God puts two trees. the tree of life and the tree of knowledge and good and evil. And basically God says, if you know the story, he says, you can eat from the tree of life, but not from the tree of the garden of good and evil. Now, in my mind, I look at that and I go, isn't that kind of odd? God creates everything good, and yet he puts this tree in the middle of the garden and he says, don't eat from this tree. That would be kind of like me going into my kid's playroom with toys all over the floor and putting a loaded 9mm in the middle of it and saying, kids, you can play with it whatever you want, but don't play with this because if you do, you will die. So why would God do that? That loving? Why would God put something so dangerous in the middle of the garden and say, do not touch, in essence? Well, it seems to me that if we didn't have a choice to obey, then we wouldn't necessarily have the capacity to love. Maybe God is willing to let this perfect cosmos that he has created unravel just so that he has a chance to be in a love relationship with you. Maybe he's willing to let the perfection of this world that he created back at Eden get undone so he has the chance to be in relationship with you and with me. And so the story goes on. The serpent meets Eve in the garden. She eats the fruit. There's so much we could dive into this part of the story here. She offers it to her husband. And after he eats it, for the first time, they feel their shame. And the world begins to unravel. It begins at this moment to decay. And yet what's interesting to me, when I look at the story, God says, I created the world to be good, but I'm not sure it was yet complete. That there were things to discover and learn, because God is a creative God and he's created us to be creative people. Look at what exists today that didn't exist 10 years ago. Because God's created us to create, to build. It goes back to the purpose that he's created us for. And so we see this world beginning to unravel. And as the world is unraveling, God, interestingly enough, keeps drawing closer to us. It's not that God backs away. Sure, there's a consequence that comes with the sin of disobedience. But instead of backing away from us, we see in this story that God keeps pressing in, that he gives a promise to a man by the name of Abraham. And Abraham's children are going to be as numerous as the stars in the sky. And then there's a promise to David that a king is going to come that is going to bring salvation to the world, this Messiah. Even as the Israelites are traveling in the desert and it's just painful and hard and there isn't comfort and they're longing for Egypt, they're longing for Eden, because we all long for Eden. In the middle of this, God says, I'm going to put myself among you. You'll see me in the pillar of fire and the cloud, and God is with them. And he has them create a temple that God dwells in so that he can be with his people. God longs to be with his people. God longs more than anything to be with you. And what's fascinating in this is that God doesn't just correct everything that we undid. God says, you want a solution to what you undid? You want a solution to redeeming what is unraveling? I'm going to work through you to redeem it. At one point in the story, the Israelites are being brought from Israel to Egypt. And a prophet speaks to them in Jeremiah chapter 29, verses 4 through 7. Check out what this says and see if there's a parallel in the purposes that go back to Eden. The Lord who rules over all is the God of Israel. He speaks to all those he forced to go from Jerusalem to Babylon. He says, catch this, build houses for yourself and settle down. Plant gardens and eat what they produce. What's he saying? What's the purpose? Work. You knew the answer, didn't you? You're a smart kid. He's saying work. Then he continues, get married, have sons and daughters. Find wives for your sons. Give your daughters to be married. Then they too can have sons and daughters. Increase your numbers there. It's the second purpose. Family. Do not let the number of your people get smaller. And then it continues, also work for the success of the city that I've sent you to. Pray to the Lord for that city, for if it succeeds, you too will enjoy success. Community. And so here the Israelites have walked away through disobedience from this God that longs to be with them, who has risked the cosmos to be with them and have a love relationship with them. They've walked away, and God is saying this, as you go to Babylon, as you're in exile, as you're living in this desert in essence, I want you to return to the purposes that I created you for. For your family, for your work, and for your community. And in those areas of life, you are to have authority and pray for the city that you are in, because if she prospers, you too will prosper. As Eugene prospers, you too will prosper. Powerful. But God doesn't leave it there. It's not enough for him to live in a temple, and so the story continues. And God decides that he is going to come and be among his people. That he is, in essence, going to write himself into the story of life, just as an author of a novel can write himself into the story of his novel. As an author can write himself into his epic. As one of the characters, God writes himself into the story of our lives in this person named Jesus. And so as we look at the life of Jesus, we begin to see that Jesus lives a perfect life. He demonstrates for us what it means to live in relationship with God. He shows us what it means to live in the purposes that we were created for. In our work, in our community, in our family. He shows us what it means to live with the authority that God gives us, to lead and to manage this world. He shows us how to live. But that's not enough for him. He doesn't want to just show us how to live and how to do life the way that he created it to be done. He also wants to redeem us. And so Jesus Christ gives up his life for us on a tree. And as he's hanging on the tree, what are the words that he says? Last breath, it is finished. The work is done. Purpose has been complete. But again, the story is not over. Death isn't the end. He raises 3 days later from the dead, and then he starts meeting with his followers all throughout Jerusalem. And after he ascends to heaven, the church is birthed. You're here today because of that moment in history. And Jesus gives a command to his disciples at that point. He says this, and the command is no different for his initial followers than it is for you and for me. Go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything that I've commanded. Go make disciples. Teach people how to love me. You know what Jesus is saying here? I've given you a purpose with your family, with your work, and with your community. Now go redeem the world. You want to know who the agents are for bringing God's shalom to Eugene? You are. You know how God's peace comes? You want to know how God's kingdom comes? God's kingdom comes through you. Because he's given you the authority to bring his kingdom. Jesus Christ said this, and you will do greater things than I have done. And so I've got to ask you a question. Do you have the faith and courage to do greater things than Jesus did? Do you have the faith and courage to do greater things than Jesus did? Because that's what he's called you to. That's what he's called me to. And so in this story, what we see in the oftentimes in the church, and you can see some of my passion in this, is that the church began to form. And before we knew it, the church kind of became this little club that wasn't involved in the community. And the passion that God gave me was it's time for the local church to leave the building and share God's love in tangible ways. We should never be bound by the walls of a building, because church is not about a building. The church is about people's lives. The church is about relationship. The church is about what God is doing in you and among you, and that overflowing in love and passion and faith into the life of your community, so that when people look at the life of North Park Community Church, they go, wait a minute, there's something happening there. I've got to be a part of that. There's something alive. There's hope there. Because Jesus brings hope. Jesus brings life. Jesus brings his peace. He brings his kingdom. There's another way to live than what the world has taught us, and Jesus has taught us that way of living, and the world is hungry for that. But for it to be seen, it has to be seen outside of the walls of the church, not just inside the walls of the church. Because this is like a bowl over a light. And God is saying, if you want the light to be seen, you have to remove the bowl so the world can see my light, my hope, and my life. It's powerful. And so what we see is that God is calling us to go back to the purposes of creation, where we love God and we love others, to redeem our work, to redeem our families, to redeem our community. You know what's fascinating? Churches in history, most recently, we do what are called what? Outreach events, right? We're in, they're out. Right. We're all children of God. We are all created in the image of God. And you know what? We have something in common with the people that we have perceived on the out, because they're not the out. They're the children of God, and they just haven't responded to him yet. So how are you going to redeem them? Because that's your job. That's what Jesus has called you to do, is to redeem them. Well, I think you're well on the way to redeeming Eugene. I think God's doing amazing things in Eugene. I've had the privilege of meeting and working with pastors across the country, and that's continuing to increase right now for the work we do with Generosity Feeds. This last week, after I flew in, Aaron brought me to a meeting of 50 pastors in Eugene. Every denominational background you can think of, you know what they had in common? They love Jesus. They love Jesus. In traveling the country, I have yet to find a community where 50 pastors come together for one mission and one cause, Jesus. You know, 50 pastors from Eugene ended up going on a prayer summit retreat just a few weeks ago, a month ago. I've never seen that before. Because they want to see God do something new in Eugene. You're part of something that is bigger than North Park. The kingdom of God is coming to one of the most liberal places in North America. And you know what? I don't think that he cares if it's liberal. And it might stay liberal. Think about that. Because God isn't drawing lines. He wants you to bring hope. He wants you to invite people into a brand new, incredibly different way of living. And you're doing it. So I want to show you a video right now that tells another piece of the story of what God is doing in and through you and maybe what it looks like to bring hope to your community. Let's watch this together. Isn't that fun? Isn't it great to see what God is already doing through you? And you're only at the beginning of the story. You're only at the beginning of the story of what God is doing. I love hearing the stories of what God is doing through you in your community to redeem your community. And here's what I want to encourage you in: keep it going. Keep it going and bring it into your work. I heard a great story yesterday of Rob. He gave me permission to tell this story. It doesn't end with your community. Remember, another, it's community, work, and what's the third one? Family. Rob was a while back over in China doing some consulting for a warehouse over there for the company that he was working for. And he walked into this warehouse doing his job, business to be done, things to be accomplished, and he notices that there are holes all in the women's bathroom door, and there's a direct line of sight to these women and their bodies. He looked at the people that he's meeting with. He said, listen, we got a lot to do here. That's unacceptable. And we're done. Get that fixed. It needs to be done tomorrow, and I'll be back. That's when we'll continue business. I want you to catch this. He brought the kingdom of heaven to a warehouse in China. Yeah, you can draw a picture. Got the idea? He's bringing dignity to women in China. That is God's kingdom. Because God gave him authority to call that shot. And God has given every one of you in your place of work authority to call some shots. And I don't know what it's going to look like in your place of work. That's what it looked like for Rob. Amazing picture. But God's given you authority to bring his kingdom and redemption to your work. And God's given you authority to bring redemption to your family. And if you faced pain in your childhood, that does not have to repeat with your family. If you faced divorce when you were growing up, that does not have to repeat with your family, because Jesus has given you authority to bring his redemption and his kingdom to your family. And as we work to bring God's redemption to those areas, guess what? What Jesus says, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. The kingdom of heaven is here. It's among you. You're going to begin to experience the values of what it means to live in the kingdom of heaven on earth. You get to get a taste of heaven here. And it doesn't end here. Because there's a fourth category there, restoration. Beautiful piece of the story right at the end. Check this out. It says this. This is in Revelation. I love this. It's written to John. John writes, "Behold, I am making all things new. And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, and there shall be no longer be any curse. And his bond servants shall receive him, and they will see his face, and they shall reign forever and ever." Do you feel the hope in that? This is just the primer for what's coming. And then it continues in Revelation chapter 21, verse 2. "And I saw the holy city of the new Jerusalem. It was coming down out of heaven from God. It was prepared like a beautiful bride dressed for her husband." We start in a garden and it ends in a city. We start in a garden, and God, through relationship and love with us, forms us and brings us to the city of God. A paradise recreated, a paradise that your heart longs for. And to get there, your job and my job is to bring redemption to our homes, to our cities, and to our work. Jesus, thank you so much for the story that you're writing. And thanks for inviting us to be part of an amazing epic that is unfolding around us every day. And God, my prayer is this, is that as we've gotten above the canopy this morning, my prayer is that you will use this story that we've heard this morning to repurpose us every day of our lives for the redemption that you have given us the authority to bring through Jesus Christ in our work, in our families, and in our community. In Jesus' name, amen.